Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Cybersecurity Business. I'm your host, Kevin Pouchet, the COO of KLogix. Today's topic is all about building and developing your ideal security team. And it's not just about tech expertise, but more about navigating the highly competitive talent landscape and finding the right people who can adapt, innovate, and thrive in today's challenging cybersecurity environment. And I say competitive talent landscape because I think as of now, there's 4 million open cybersecurity jobs globally, which is just a staggering number of open jobs. But thankfully, we have the right person to talk to us today. It's Karen Higgins-Carter. Karen is a multi-industry chief tech and digital officer with recent roles at high-profile organizations such as Webster Bank and Gilbane Building Company. Currently, she is an independent director at International Money Express, where she serves on the audit and nominating and governance committees, and Otsuka Pharmaceutical Companies, where she serves on the compensation and organization development committee. Her career has been distinguished by shaping and executing innovation, technology, artificial intelligence, and cyber strategies to position long-established global companies for the digital future that we're now in. So Karen, awesome to have you. I know you have a lot of responsibilities, so thanks for pulling yourself away and joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thrilled to be here.
So Karen, let's jump into it. You've built a lot of teams, and as I mentioned, at a lot of high-profile companies. When thinking back to building some of those teams, what were some of the key traits that you looked for in those first few hires?
Now, thanks, Kevin. I think the first thing I look for is business acumen, is being able to understand the business that you work in, understand how the business makes money, understand key risks to the business plan, and being able to use that as a mental map through which you execute your responsibilities and think about the changes that you want to lead.
So business acumen. So is that a hard balance to strike when interviewing candidates and looking for business acumen versus, let's say, technical expertise?
I think the shorter answer is you need both.
Okay.
I think there's often, I think, an overemphasis on, well, they're just a techie and can't learn the business. Or they're a process person and are not technical enough. I think the common thread across all teams, I think the best teams really have the right mix of skills, because there's many aspects of cybersecurity that are process-driven, control uh-huh. environments, uh-huh. Aspects that are deeply technical, as well as putting that all through the lens of your understanding of the business. I think everybody needs to understand that. No one should get a pass because they have hard technical skills. They need to be able to learn the business as well. And if you can learn cybersecurity skills, you can learn a business.
Now, is that hard to find when interviewing candidates to have both business and technical acumen?
Yes. It is hard to find, which is why, as a leader, you need to be willing to develop your teams.
Okay. Now, most of the teams, have you built some of these teams from scratch? I have to assume at some of these large companies, you must have inherited a team to some extent.
Yes. For most companies, I've inherited a team. I can't recall a time that I've had to build something completely from scratch. I have had to turn over some leaders, particularly where there's integrity problems. I mean, think about a cybersecurity team. It has to be one of the most trusted teams uh-huh. in a company. And the slightest indication that there's an integrity issue will get you off one of my teams very quickly. But beyond that, I think, you know, looking at your team as a set of individuals who have their own goals, their own career dreams, and can be developed into roles such that when you put them together, you operate effectively.
So outside business acumen and technical acumen, are there other, let's say, unconventional traits or skills that you look for?
Yeah, you know, I look for hard work. And mm-hmm. I don't know that that's unconventional, but, you know, one of the indicators to me of someone who is really a hard worker is someone who has had to work to put themselves through school. It's not necessarily going to the most renowned and highly thought of universities and colleges. It's about, did you have to pay your tuition while you were going to school? Are you potentially coming out of the military and mm-hmm. looking to transition careers? I think it's that type of background that is always intriguing for me, because I think it brings, you know, not only a sense of work ethic, it brings a sense of acting like an owner and taking ownership for the outcomes you create, as well as a sense of creativity that, you know, if you've had to work your way through school or you are transitioning out of the military, I think it generates a sense of creative problem solving that I find to have very, very helpful, particularly in a cybersecurity team, because, as you know, nothing is straightforward, particularly when you run into incidents or other challenges, that creative streak can be very helpful.
Oh, for sure. I think, look, it also gives a level of accountability. I think, you know, we're also talking about sort of grit, for lack of a better word.
Right.
I think those are super important.
Right. Yeah, great way to describe it.
So let's talk about diversity, and that could be diversity in terms of background or diversity in terms of experience or thinking. Does that play a role in your strategy of building a team?
Huge.
Okay.
It brings an incredibly important role. I would start with making sure that a sense of belonging mm-hmm. is first and foremost present on the team. And I think there's a distinction between, hey, here's the house we built, and here's an on-ramp for you to be able to come into our house.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, you've joined the team, and let's build this house together. I think if leaders and team members can understand that distinction, it's then and only then that you get the benefit of having diverse experiences and diverse points of view on your team. And so I think that is the most, I think a lot of folks and leaders, when they think about diversity, they're looking for people who have come potentially from different backgrounds, think differently. But it's all for naught if your view of belonging is we will give them an on-ramp into our house. It has to be, they are here to help us build the house, rebuild the house, reshape the strategy that we're pursuing.
So clearly you understand the persona of the type of people that you want to hire. You have a plan. So you get a plan. You know the type of people you want to hire. You know their traits. How the heck do you find them? You know, I remember maybe this was 7 years ago. There was 1.5 million open jobs in the world, and now there's almost 4 million open jobs. And, you know, it used to be, well, you were competing in your geography because everybody went into the office, and post-COVID, it's global. So you're now competing against people in Ireland, the UK, all over the world for top talent. So, you know, how do you sell them on your specific organization? Is it culture? Is it pay? How do you do it?
I think it's, you know, pay has to be there, right? I mean, people, if they feel like they're being underpaid, it feels like a kick in the gut. So I think the basics of pay equity and not lowballing people because you can, I think that just goes without saying. But sometimes I'm surprised by the fact that I actually have to say that sometimes. But that just, you know, is clearly a non-starter, particularly for people who are in demand. But as you said, I mean, there's a huge mismatch between supply and demand for cybersecurity skills. So you have to be able to develop it. And you have to be able to attract people into a team, even if it's just internally. I think sometimes I have found cybersecurity folks from other areas of the organization, someone who's great on your network team, your network engineering team, is a great candidate for a cybersecurity role. Because if they can learn, you know, if they're a network engineer, then you can clearly teach them the other aspects of the role. As you know, cybersecurity is less about being an independent discipline and more about executing technology operations processes and designs and architectures in a secure way. And so if you can take people from adjacent areas, I think we can begin to close some of the skills gap.
And I think the same must be true for retaining that top tier talent, right? It's so easy now for people to understand what other opportunities there are for them out there. And I'm also glad that you did mention pay, because people tend to run from that. But yes, you need a strong culture, you need a strong team. But if your pay is way out of line, I think you're now decreasing the talent pool that you could potentially hire.
Right. No, that's exactly right. Your pay has to be in line with market. Smart candidates know what the market is for their skills. And I think good companies are very, very focused on pay equity. And pay is not everything, right? It's the complete package in terms of who you work for, the profile of the company. Are they growing? Will they invest and develop you? Those are the questions, you know, that I always look at when I look at opportunities, and that I think everybody should be looking at.
Likewise, I totally agree. So you just mentioned opportunity and the ability to have upward mobility in an organization. Did you implement some sort of mentor program to take, let's say, junior talent and mentor that talent and help grow that talent and give a platform for people to really advance their career?
Yeah, I would say less formal than, say, mentor program. I have mixed feelings on mentor programs in general. I think sometimes they're a little bit forced. You know, one time I went to a cocktail party where mentors were going to meet with their mentees. And It was the most awkward, you know, an uncomfortable party I'd been to in a long time. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's as formal as mentoring. One thing that I do as a leader, I had one organization where we rapidly needed to improve capabilities and do it in a way that was sustainable. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I did is create accountability. So named process owners. So you own, say, incident management, or someone else on the team owned the vulnerability management process. And I actually, you know, people were kind of shying away from it a little bit, because I think I was less than clear when I said, hey, you own the vulnerability management process end to end. Like, here's your role, but you have a broader organizational responsibility. And so I held what I called the mental promotion party, where I bought cupcakes. Everybody,
who doesn't love cupcakes?
Right. And I said, you know, you are hereby, you know, promoted into these process owner roles. Was it a formal job description? No. And I wrote them all cards, you know, expressing my confidence in their ability to execute these roles. And so now they had something to own. So you could be, say, a vulnerability analyst, or you could work in the SOC, but you had responsibility for incident response as a process. And then I had a series of monthly process reviews where we would review, here's your process map, here's your risk and control self-assessment, here are your top control weaknesses that you want to resolve. And the agenda was completely driven by the process owners. And so it was an opportunity, I think, to demonstrate what managing by metrics is and how to drive continuous improvement. And the talent that really engaged and embraced that have all been promoted since then, because they could begin to think in a way that was different than simply executing tasks that were given to them in their roles. They could take a larger responsibility. They had accountability and authority to redesign processes, to prioritize control implementations, and to execute that way. Another thing I like to do is bring more junior people into those meetings. Like if there's high potential talent, I love to bring them into my operating reviews just to observe that this is the type of dialogue that you have at a more senior level in the organization, so they can get a sense of what the expectations are at the next level.
So when developing skills,
how do you feel about developing skills through certifications?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I am, because I think some of the certifications are really, really good on-ramps for people into either a technical domain or into cybersecurity. Like if you are transitioning from the military or from another role, some of the early certifications are excellent at just getting you network administration skills or likewise. So those I'm a big fan of. I'm also a fan of the ISC 2 certifications. There's real structure. You know, the CISSP can be criticized for being, you know, a mile wide and an inch deep, but there's a pedagogy behind that. There is rationale behind granting that certification that really tests your thinking and your experience, if not, you know, the 1,000-page book that you have to read in order to prepare for the exam. But I'm a big fan. I think it isn't everything, but it's definitely something that gives leaders a certain level of confidence that you have a level of competence, potentially in a domain that they don't necessarily understand.
Right. Education is always a great thing. I agree with you on certifications. How about conferences? I have this vision of some of the conferences out there where people are walking around with a plastic bag, you know, just begging for free mouse pads and anything else that costs 99 cents, which it always blows my mind that these high paid people just want anything free that is complete garbage. How do you feel about conferences?
Yeah, I would broaden the question a little bit in terms of, I'm a huge fan of external focus. Right. I think particularly in cyber, understanding the landscape, you know, threat intel, I'm a huge fan of external focus, because if you think that you can run a program based upon what you and your team know alone, you're kidding yourself. You risk becoming ignorant of better ways of operating, particularly in constrained budget environments. My personal rule for conferences is, if you go to a conference, come back with 10 business cards. Or contacts in these days, for people who are not vendors. So here are the folks that you met, and then give a presentation to the team on what you learned. So you go with some responsibility and a learning agenda when you come back. So I'll fund that all day long. I think one of my pet peeves are folks who go to conferences for the sake of going to conferences. Like, I see, you know,
well,
I see
really, it. Right. It could be a reward, though. There's something to be said about that.
Right. Exactly. So I think if you're going to go with an agenda to learn, go with a list of people that you want to meet. You know, one great trick for conferences is find out who's going ahead of time and introduce yourself to them, or create a smaller conference within a conference. Like, look for, I don't know, if you're a Black Hat, people who work in regional banks who are also at Black Hat, and join them for lunch. I think that is the benefit of getting out and going to conferences.
I love that. I think I'm going to steal that from you. 10 business cards and a presentation.
Right.
So great. So I think we've covered the nuts and bolts, at least, Karen, of developing sort of an ideal security team. Anything major that you think we're missing?
Yeah, I mean, I would just circle back to where we started in terms of, you know, learn the business. Easy to say. Sometimes it takes time. So don't put too much pressure on yourself. But things, you know, very actionable things that can be done, particularly now in the spring. If you work for a public company, read the annual report. Understand the financial statements. If you don't understand financial statements, go back to school, take an undergraduate accounting 101 class, and you'll be able to read financial statements. Read the risk factors in the 10K filing. You can do a direct mapping between those risk factors and CIA. And so those types of very actionable things can make you much more relevant and effective, because you can put what you're doing through the lens of the business that you are in. And that is what helps you accomplish your goals, as well as lead change. I mean, most cybersecurity teams are really made up of a number of change leaders, because they're often, I would say more often than not, having to create awareness of risk and change behaviors to mitigate risk. And doing that through the lens of the business that you work in is the most effective way to do it, in my experience.
Right. Look, if there's one industry that needs to be open to change, it's this industry, cybersecurity. What I'd like to do, Karen, is close with some rapid fire Q&A, just a series of a few questions to get to know Karen, not necessarily Karen as the IT and security executive, but also Karen sort of personally. So I'm going to fire a few questions at you, and I can't wait to hear your response.
I can't wait to hear his questions.
Okay. So if your CEO gave you unlimited budget for one thing, what would you spend it on?
CEO gave me unlimited budget. Mm-hmm. I can only pick one. Okay. I'd say talent development.
Good answer. Talent development goes with the spirit of this podcast. What? So what is the last book you read?
Immunity to Change.
Immunity to Change. Sounds like a business book.
It is a book by Professor Robert Keegan at Harvard University. It goes through the reasons why people resist change. So the premise of the book is you have all good intentions, but also conflicting commitments that are sometimes unconscious that prevent you from doing simple things like eat less, exercise more. Nope. It's a very relevant book.
Very relevant. I just bought a Kindle 2 weeks ago because I want to make it easier to read and move into the latest century. So that will be on my list. Next question. If you could instantly master any new skill, professionally, personally, I don't care, what would it be?
Ice skating.
Ice skating. Okay.
Yes.
Love it.
Trying to learn. My daughter is a high-level skater and now hockey player. And when she retired, and this was, 2 years ago, I took her spot with her ice dance coach. Because it's something I've always wanted to do.
Sure.
And I would have been a much, much better sports parent had I done this earlier. I had no appreciation for how hard it is. And I've been slacking off a little bit more than I wanted to. But I love it when I can do it. I will never be good at it. But it's great stress relief because I will never be good at it. So I don't set goals. And you can't think about work if you're on ice.
Right. Okay, next. If you weren't working in IT, cybersecurity as an executive, what other field would you be in? Maybe ice skating.
No, I don't. Yeah, maybe. I don't think I could do that. It's too hard. Something creative. So either an architect, I spent a couple of years at a building company, as you know. Mm-hmm. Always impressed at an architect's ability to visualize space in 3D and how people will use the space and the creative process that entails, obviously with constraints around cost and physics. So I think that is a really interesting profession that if I had to do it over again, I might do that.
Architect. Awesome. One of my kids wants to be an architect. I think it's a pretty cool field as well. Okay, last question. What's one piece of advice you wish you had when you first started your career?
That it'll all turn out okay. I think that's the advice. I've been very blessed to work at great companies and to have really wonderful sponsors and mentors and opportunities to learn a lot. I mean, so I'm just so lucky. But I went through, particularly when I had my children, and they're older now. I mean, they're in their 20s, but I had them fairly young. And when I did, I found myself looking around for a template I could copy. Like, oh, Sue has two children and she works full time. And then I learned, well, Sue's husband stays at home with them. And that wasn't my situation. Or Mary's mom lives with them. And that was not my situation. So I think I spent a lot of nights worrying about how is this all going to work out? And less time trusting that it would and trusting my own ability to make good choices because careers are long. Life is long. Careers are long. And the good times are temporary and the bad times are temporary. And I just wish I spent less time worrying about it and more time confident that it would all work out.
It's great advice. I think sometimes it's hard to really hear and understand that when you're a lot younger. And I know you mentioned you were lucky, and sure, luck plays a part. But you know what I always say is luck is the residue of design. So I'm sure your success was due to a lot of hard work and putting yourself in the right place to take advantage of that luck. So, well, that's a wrap on our rapid fire round and on the whole podcast. So, Karen, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
And thanks for having me.
I'll let you get back to a lot of other responsibilities that you have, and maybe I'll see you on another podcast that talks about why people like free, useless garbage at trade shows. But, you know, until then, to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.